It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, folks, once again, it's time for another edition of Valley Edition. It's my great pleasure to have on the phone right now Philip Manning, calling in from cool downtown Talkeetna, KTNA. Welcome, Philip.
Thanks, Mike.
So say the temperature for us so that we can all share that.
Well, let's see. I was looking, when I first told you, it was on my computer, but the temperature, current temperature at the Talkeetna State Airport is 11 degrees below zero Fahrenheit as we record this on Friday morning.
Okay. And it's important that we say that. We identify the moment in time where whatever we're doing is happening, because I've been fascinated over the past couple of weeks. We've had some relatively colder temperatures for this time of year. We're sort of entering a zone of normal temperatures. And then I'm looking ahead to Monday, and what we're projecting for Palmer is 34 degrees. What's the sense there for Talkeetna?
I haven't checked this morning, but as of last night, it was supposed to be warmer, you know, getting up into the 20s. And at last check, there was actually supposed to be some snow.
Yes. Oh, big time snow over much of the area. But let's go on and talk about something which, as people listen to this broadcast in Talkeetna, will begin right after the broadcast. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about an event starting at 7 p.m. on Saturday. Maybe you could describe what that's all about.
Yeah, so at 7 o'clock on Saturday evening, we will be having here in Talkeetna the still technically 40th annual, even though we didn't have one last year for COVID reasons, but the Talkeetna Bachelor Auction and Ball will be taking place.
Oh, okay. Do you have some history about that? Like, how many years has it been going on?
Well, it started 41 years ago, and it's happened every year except last year. Even, you know, 2018, after we had that significant earthquake literally the day before,
right,
the auction still went on. COVID kept us from doing it last year. But, yeah, it's become a very much a multi-generational event at this point.
So what about the people who have participated? Is there still someone who participated 41 years ago around?
I don't know quite that long. I mean, some of those guys are still around in the area. Some of them are married now, and others just don't participate anymore. But there's definitely still some of those original folks around and have some really interesting stories from back in the day. You know, as the decades have gone on, it's become a much more, I guess, organized event, for lack of a better word.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's been held at, I think, every bar in town at some point over the years, and now we do it at the Sheldon Community Arts Hangar.
Okay.
It's a good venue for that.
Very, very, very good. Now, I also understand that people come from far and away, not just from the immediate Talkeetna area, to participate.
Absolutely. Well, especially the attendees. You know, there are definitely some local ladies that show up, but plenty from Anchorage, and typically some from outside, though I'm not sure how many we'll have coming up from outside this year, just as, you know, we're still in the midst of the pandemic, and we cut down on the number of tickets that are going to be available this year. The ticket numbers are cut in half.
Oh.
Just to provide, you know, to not cram that building quite as full of people as normal during COVID.
Well, since you've brought up COVID, you did it. I'm curious how people in Talkeetna are viewing the new kid on the COVID block, Omicron, or for that matter, the whole issue of mitigation strategies for COVID.
Yeah, so, I mean, Omicron is still, it's so new, you know, I think as of yesterday when I looked, there were a handful of cases scattered across the United States. I think it's still kind of early days as far as what that's potentially going to mean down the road.
Right.
At this point, I think people have all they can handle trying to contend with Delta still at this point. I mean, we just put up a story yesterday. I kind of detailed my own experience. I just a couple days ago got done with my 10 days of isolation.
Oh.
I had a vaccine breakthrough case of COVID-19, and thankfully it was a very mild case, you know, and the evidence says that being fully vaccinated probably helped with that case being mild. So,
well, talk a little bit more about that, because this has been the fascinating thing, and that is coming up with some symptoms of one sort or the other. How did you go about testing to discover that you were testing positive?
Well, we're very fortunate in this area in that there is a large supply of home tests available through, you know, the Mattsu Health Foundation distributing them through a number of local nonprofits.
Right.
We've also got Denali Education Center, which has a testing facility set up there. And as I said in the story, you know, this time of year, some kind of congestion and sinus issues are pretty normal for me when it starts to get cold and dry.
Right.
And so at first I didn't think anything of it, but it was actually I couldn't taste my favorite ice cream.
Uh-oh.
And I said, well, I should probably take one of these home tests that I've got available to me. And I did. And I was positive, and I thought, well, maybe it's wrong. So I took another one, and it was also positive.
Okay.
And I scheduled an appointment at the testing facility because I still just wanted to be real sure and was probably honestly kind of living in a state of denial still.
Well, sure. It can't be me.
I've got everything right.
Yeah, you know? Right. So you were tested there, and you got the trifecta, three positives. And so the instructions you received or the understanding you had was to, you know, tell us what you did then.
To isolate for 10 days, you know,
right,
which is kind of the standard thing. And, you know, fortunately, I had already gone to the grocery store the week prior, so I had plenty of food in the house. But, you know, the folks at DEC, they've got some information they can distribute. And, you know, the Upper Susitna Food Pantry in this area has a program going now as well that they can help people who have to isolate but maybe aren't in the same position I was, where they had just gone to the grocery store. And they'll, you know, do grocery pickups for folks, as well as do special distributions for them if they need help from the pantry itself.
Okay.
So there's some resources in place to help people be able to make that isolation happen for 10 days. And then, you know, I had the work laptop at home and did what I could from home.
Okay, so here's the kicker. Here's the really interesting thing. Betwixt the time you reached for the ice cream and realized that it was without taste, and the time you were tested and you isolated, were you in contact with people, and how did you deal with that?
Yeah, so I mean, I mentioned that I'd gone to the grocery store. You know, I'd started feeling a little bit of that stuffiness that day, even, and I had, you know, kind of written it off at that point, but, you know, I have been trying to be very good about wearing a mask.
Sure.
When I'm out and about, to prevent other people from getting sick. There were only a couple of other folks, you know, my co-host on my Friday night radio show,
right,
that I had actually like been around for a significant period of time. And so I reached out to those people and let them know, you know, what the Department of Health and Health and Social Services says is, you know, 15 minutes of close contact is what is the kind of folks that need to know that they may have been exposed. So
very good.
There was only a handful of those, and including, you know, my coworkers. But here in the building, we've got a mask policy in place for staff. So yeah.
That works. And I'm going to guess that some, if not all of them, also may have looked in the mirror for symptoms and then also might have taken at least a quick test.
Yeah, you know, presumably. I don't know. The availability of those is something that I think is really interesting in this area, because, you know, you look at other parts of the country and people are talking about difficulty accessing tests. And at least in this part of the valley, that is not really a concern at this point. There's plenty of tests to be had.
And the same can be said for where I am in Palmer. The same distribution happened actually through the library, where if you needed a test or a group of them, either for the station or you're going to be using them yourselves, and they're very, very easy to find. Absent that, you can find them in the stores. And generally speaking, I think people have been making it difficult to keep the data clear, because as I understand, when you take that test, you don't always report it to anyone. It means that there is this whole volume of data about positive or negative tests that doesn't get into the system.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent point. And honestly, that was part of what played into my wanting to get a test at an actual testing site as well, because then that did get fed into that data. I did end up getting a call from a contact tracer at DHSS. And, you know, I told the person that called, I said, you know, I was a little surprised because I'd heard about the backlog they'd been struggling with. And what I was told at the time was that, you know, they had just really started to catch back up, but they were already seeing another uptick in case reporting after Thanksgiving.
Right, right. And that'll be interesting to see as we move forward, both with the standard versions of the virus as well as what appears to be slowly, maybe rapidly spreading Omicron.
I saw something online that said this was not how I wanted to learn the Greek alphabet.
Ah, right, right. Well, there is another piece that Zas Hollander did in the ADN. I'm wondering if you had a chance to look at it. Her article in the ADN was fascinating to me because it dealt with this issue of testing. And in particular, a rather abrupt, I think that's accurate to call it that, shifting of testing sites. There had been in Anchorage a site at the Lusac Library, which had been, as I understood, the most heavily used testing site in Anchorage. And it suddenly went away to the point where some people arrived and said, well, what happened? And there were bits and pieces of information that came out that pointed to a series of things. One was a change in provider, with a new provider being Capstone, and a discussion of the reasoning behind it was because Capstone was set up, and we're familiar with Capstone here in the Valley, and at the airport for that matter, was able to bill insurance. And the reasoning seemed to be good, but the question that was raised, and interviewed a variety of people, including at least one assembly member and others, to try to understand if this were happening, where was the information made available so that if someone wanted to be tested, they knew where to go, et cetera? And the answers were not really clear. I saw nothing. Have you heard anything more about that issue?
No, definitely not anything beyond what Zas was able to dig up.
Yep. So I'm looking forward to hearing that because I just as an aside for the moment, one of the I found from the get-go issues with COVID and the reaction to it was getting straight information. I could understand from a national level initially trying to sort of get out, well, this is our approach to both testing and then later on the availability of a variety of vaccines and so on. But we became used to, I think, here in the state of Alaska, of having some clarity about where and how to be tested and to get vaccines. So I think I personally was sort of lulled into believing, well, we've got this down and there are some changes that are happening, but I can follow those changes. And this seemed to be a very strange way to continue, as I understand, the municipality's approach to dealing with the pandemic. Do you have any comment to add beyond what I've just said?
No, I mean, I think you summarized it well, and I think, it seems like the abruptness of that change caught a lot of people off guard.
So we'll see as we go along, and perhaps next week we'll have a bit more just about what that is. But let's shift to another topic which in many ways affects the entire borough, but also affects your area. And I'm talking about starting with redistricting, because that's the foundation level of what's going on. Many listeners understand that there's just been a process which happens every 10 years where people come together and in a committee and they make recommendations for a change given changes in population around the state of the way the districts will be drawn for people who are going to be running for both the Alaska House and the Alaska Senate. Each time this has been done, typically what happens is that after the committee makes its recommendations, there's an appeal, there are lawsuits to the courts to straighten things out. And the courts do intervene and make decisions. The focus right now is a lawsuit which has just been announced essentially by the borough, Matsu Borough, but also Michael Brown, its manager, about redistricting. What's your understanding of that lawsuit?
Yeah, so I mean, like you said, you know, it's pretty recent news, and it looks like details are pretty scarce at this point. As of last night, at least, it hadn't even shown up on CourtView. But like Becky Borer from the Associated Press had the initial story, at least the initial story I saw about that. And the concern that's being cited is kind of diluting some of the vote of the Matsu itself. And, yeah, I mean, you alluded to one of the areas that has its district being changed pretty significantly in a lot of ways is the one that represents the northern Susitna Valley. It's going to be, you know, as drawn now, incorporates much of the Denali borough with the notable exception of Cantwell, and then also cuts out Meadow Lakes, the part of Meadow Lakes that's part of currently District 10.
Okay, and my understanding is that in some of the discussions, for example, in the past, we've had Valdez as a part of the district that comes down into the area just north of Palmer, and neither the borough nor Valdez apparently wanted to be joined together that way.
Well, and it's been that way, you know, we've had it that way since the last apportionment as well. And the current Senate District E is pretty interesting looking because it stretches from the northwestern end of the Matsu all the way down to Valdez, skirting around much of Greater Palmer and Wasilla.
Got it. So bottom line is it does look like, starting with the borough and other entities that will be doing their own lawsuits, we're not quite sure yet what these districts are going to be. Some of them are pretty clear, but some of them are not. And so I'd like to walk through two other aspects of this whole thing. At the present time, who is your representative in the House and your senator up there in the Talkeetna area?
Representative David Eastman and Senator Mike Schauer, respectively.
Got it. Now, there's another guy by the name of Kirka, who is a representative just south of David Eastman's area or thereabouts. And as the redistricting was being proposed, it appeared that Eastman and Kirka were going to be in the same district and would have to run against one another. But Mr. Kirka said, well, apparently I've something better to do, and he's running for governor.
Right.
Okay, which leads us into a kind of an interesting thing going on here, and that is maybe a reminder for listeners, we can't do it too often, of the new voting structure that's happening, which starts by saying, if you want to run for governor, have at it, because it's an open primary this year, not a primary by party. That means that everybody and anybody from whatever party will be able to throw their hat in the ring. The voting will happen all at once. It'll be actually a vote by anyone from any party. And the top four people in that will move on to the general election. Did I get that right?
I believe so. I was kind of nodding along. Nothing you said flagged for me. So.
Okay, but that's huge, because up until this time, we've had party primaries where Republicans gather here, Democrats there, maybe someone else somewhere else, and there's been some restrictions on who can vote and which primary. But we're taking all that away, so we can say that if you want to, you think you deserve to be governor, then you can put yourself in there. And if you can get enough to be one of the top four vote getters in that exercise, then you'll move on to this general election. Now, there's more. There's still more. Because in addition to having an open primary this way, we also have ranked choice voting. Wow. Why don't you take that one? I took the open primary.
So, I mean, ranked choice voting is something that was voted on by, you know, statewide a couple years ago now. And it's, you know, something that's been looked at in other states to varying degrees. And it's kind of exactly what it sounds like. You know, you'll have those four candidates on the general election ballot and you put them in order of your preference. And so there's a couple of different ways that that's calculated. It does make it a little bit more complex to calculate who the winner is, but, you know, still in a lot of likelihood, you're going to have, you know, a couple of candidates probably get the majority of those first preference votes, and then it goes down to, okay, how many second preference votes did someone get if, you know, in order to tabulate the final winner.
I keep looking at this and I say almost maybe once a week I have to review it. And the best way I have found to review it is to actually put names, token names and numbers on a piece of paper and walk through it. Not because it's going to be difficult. I don't anticipate a problem when I step to the ballot and vote. I think I'm going to be able to pick my first choice and so on, second, third, and fourth. But the real question comes in two parts, I think. One is the strategy. Should a person just vote for one person? Or vote for all of them in order, how will that affect an outcome? Which leads to the second question of what happens when no one gets enough to win on the first go-round and the fourth person drops away and their votes are allocated on up. It's at that point that it's worthwhile looking at just how that actually works. Because it's possible, and here I would reference, there are a number of examples out there, and one that I came across was fascinating because it showed that the person who won, who was leading, who had a third of the votes, but those votes tended to be concentrated on what I would call a very narrow base of voting, where most of the other people who were voting for the other candidates were not really interested in this leading voter. And that leading vote on the first go-round with a third of the votes actually lost the race.
Right, yeah, there's some interesting edge cases that can come up. And it also plays into what you were just talking about, you know, about how much of the ballot people are actually filling out, if they're filling out all of those choices all the way down, because eventually, if a voter does not fill out all those choices, eventually their ballot stops being counted.
Right.
Those rounds progress.
Right. So if you want to make sure that you're able to have your votes be counted, then you're going to have to figure a way to do that. I suspect as we roll closer and closer to the actual balloting next fall, that's going to be something that a lot of people, if they're regular voters, super voters, are going to be carefully looking at. Because depending on whether there's a swath of voters, for example, with a certain idea or bent, they may find that they will be strategically in a bad place unless they think through how they want either their number one choice or perhaps a number two choice selected. Yeah.
Right. And yeah, I'm sure we'll have lots of coverage as that election gets closer as far as how exactly this whole process works, because it is new.
Right. So we're beginning to see also a number of candidates. Mr. Kirker, we've mentioned, has already decided that he's not going to run for the House. He's going elsewhere. We have a number of other candidates around the state. I just saw a representative from Fairbanks, Republican from an area up there, who's decided not to run again. And those kinds of things are going to be interesting as they lead to the opening, in particular, as we're pointing out, with an open primary and ranked choice. Could be some changing up at the legislative level.
For
yeah.
Sure.
Okay. Well, Philip, I've asked a lot of questions. We've covered a lot of ground so far here. But before we finish up, are there any last things you want to share about the Talkeetna area with our listeners?
So I want to give a shout-out to the Sioux Valley Rams volleyball team, who are at the state tournament as we're recording this. They've won their first two matches, and the winner's bracket final happens Friday evening at 6:15. So by Monday, we'll know how well they ended up doing in the tournament, but off to a really strong start of winning their first two matches.
And it's a nice thing to hear that as opposed to the first days of the pandemic when athletic competition was interfered with, that we actually have competition going on.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, Philip Manning, KTNA, I want to thank you very much for calling in today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Mike.
And I just have to say, we'll be back next week with another edition of Valley Edition.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.